You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org. There's an app for that.
She seems nice. She does. She's seems like a hard-working woman, believe me.
She's incredibly remorseful and ashamed. I'm told at the arraignment that she has made a full confession.
She was very careful in how she did this. As the DA said, this was a sophisticated fraud. She applied and was hired before we instituted our criminal background check policy.
Well, they're talking about Anita Collins. She's in the news as, well, they're calling her a church lady. She was a clerk handling money for the New York Archdiocese. And it's been discovered that she has allegedly taken over time in the form of about 450 checks that she wrote to her son's account, nearly $1 million from the Archdiocese. That's some of her neighbors talking about she didn't seem like a person who would do this. Her attorney, Howard Simmons, saying, look, she's sorry she did this. And Joe Swilling, Director of Communications for the Archdiocese of New York. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Wednesday afternoon. It's the 1st of February. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Is the church gullible? Is the church too trusting when it comes to who handles the church's money? Usually it's a volunteer enterprise until it, in a lot of congregations, until it makes it to, say, an officer of the congregation. It's really a volunteer enterprise. Volunteers collect the offerings, they bundle them up, they sort them out, often they count them. Sometimes the first person who has any kind of official legal thing on the line there is bank teller who takes the deposit. So is the church too trusting with its money, too trusting with those who handle its money? What could you do to prevent something like this? Audio open lines on this Wednesday afternoon, February the 1st. A little bit later, after we hear from you, your answers to that question about whether or not the church is too trusting, Kelly Fedoric of Americans United for Life will join us. The big news regarding Planned Parenthood is that it's lost a major donor. In the Komen for a Cure Foundation, they've said, at least for the time being, no more donations to Planned Parenthood. Why? And is it permanent? We'll find out. Then a little bit later, we'll talk about the theology of the cross, especially in the light of life's big tragedies, the life-changing, life-ending tragedies. Dr. Ed Engelbrecht, senior editor of Bible Resources at Concordia Publishing House, will join us in the last part of the program to talk about the theology of the cross and the tragedies of this life. Now, you can join us, especially here for audio open lines. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, we can take your questions and comments that way in real time. TalkBackAtIssuesETC.org. TalkBackAtIssuesETC.org. You can send us a tweet at IssuesETC or leave a comment, a question, a reaction to the story of a woman who's taken almost $1 million from the New York Archdiocese. And the question, is the church too trusting? At our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. First, let's get the story from CBS This Morning.
Here in New York, a woman who worked for the Roman Catholic Church is accused of stealing hundreds of thousands of dollars in church funds.
Police say Anita Collins has now confessed. As Michelle Miller reports, the charges are a big surprise to those who know her.
To her neighbors, Anita Collins was a devout Catholic who attended Mass daily.
She seems nice. She does. She's seems like a hard-working woman, believe me.
But Manhattan's district attorney says the 67-year-old Collins was a thief who stole at least $1.2 million from the Archdiocese of New York. Her attorney, Howard Simmons, says his client is sorry.
She's incredibly remorseful and ashamed. I'm told at the arraignment that she has made a full confession.
Collins worked as a clerk for the Archdiocese for nearly 8 years. She allegedly wrote over 450 checks and placed them in her son's account. Each check was under $2,500, which meant she didn't have to get approval from church officials. Joe Swilling is spokesman for the church.
She was very careful in how she did this. As the DA said, this was a sophisticated fraud.
A little more of the story in just a minute. I want your answer to this question. Is the church too trusting? I'm talking about your church, your congregation, where often, very often, it's volunteers, not even employees, volunteers who handle the money, at least until it makes it to the bank teller. A background check would have helped here, but as we'll discover, even though she did have a criminal background, in this very kind of crime, she was hired before a background check policy was in place. So maybe are background checks necessary for the church, especially when it comes to people who are going to handle the money, either as employees or volunteers? Is that simply too cynical of a view? Should the church say, look, we're the church, we're in the business of trusting and understanding and not judging people, so why would we do a background check? Should volunteers be handling the offerings, be handling the money of your congregation? I mean, think about it from the standpoint of the volunteer to be presented with the temptation. In fact, I very recently was watching a volunteer count money at a church, not the one I attend, but count money at the church, and separating envelopes from checks, from dollars. And there's a stack of dollar bills there, a stack of 20s or 10s or 50s, all by himself. A trustworthy person? Yes. But it's also a situation where temptation can creep in. Are we doing them any favors by not putting some kind of safeguards in place? 1-877-623-6943. I'm asking that question, is the church too trusting? 1-877-623-MYIE. We're coming to you live this Wednesday afternoon, February the 1st. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or leave your comment and your answer to that question at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. I do apologize for the quality of CBS's audio. For some reason, it's not very good lately, and that may be a little annoying, but just bear with us. Here's the rest of the story from CBS this morning.
Collins lived a modest life, sharing this apartment in the Bronx with her daughter. But police removed paintings and boxes of collectible dolls, allegedly bought with the money. Prosecutors say she spent $37,000 on clothing from Barney's and Brooks Brothers, $18,000 at Bloomingdale's on furniture, and $19,000 in an Irish gift shop, all while earning less than $50,000 a year. Collins had been convicted of theft twice before, in 1986 and again in 1999, for stealing at least $46,000 from a temporary employment agency. She was hired by the Archdiocese in 2003.
She applied and was hired before we instituted our criminal background check policy.
Collins, who remains behind bars, has been charged with grand larceny and falsifying business records. A conviction could send the former church clerk to prison for more than 25 years. For CBS This Morning, Michelle Miller, New York.
Now I want to hear from you. Do you think the church is too trusting when it comes to how and who it handles the money? I understand that we live in an age where things like pulling money out of a plate seems a bit dated, but a lot of churches still collect their money that way, dollar bills and checks and envelopes. Does the church need to understand the temptation it puts in front of volunteers and maybe a few criminal background checks, maybe a little more due diligence? 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. We're coming to you live this Wednesday afternoon. It's the 1st of February. Your answer to the question, is the church too trusting? Let's go to the phones, talk with Cindy in St. Louis. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I think we all are subject to temptation. We had a similar situation in our homeowners association where the president, who was totally unaccountable to anyone at the time, stole lots and lots of money. I don't know that a background check would have helped. I don't think people necessarily have a criminal background, but we all can be tempted, and it's so simple to have anyone who handles large amounts of money to simply be bonded. And then if something like that happens, the money can at least be recovered.
Thank you very much, Cindy. Thanks for listening in St. Louis. What about the rest of you? 1-877-623-6943. It's Audio Open Lines. Is the church too trusting? Would the church be acting out of character if it said, look, if you're going to be handling money, even if, let's say, let's go all the way to the source, if you're even going to be handling the offering plate on Sunday morning? I mean, I watch what happens every Sunday morning. These very trustworthy, decent fellows collect the offering. They take it to the back, they put it all together, and then they carry it forward. And after that, I'm not really sure what happens to it. I trust the system and the people involved, but I'm wondering, is the church too trusting to allow this to occur? Maybe make sure that everybody's bonded, or at the very least say, you know, we can't put this in the hands of volunteers. 1-877-623-MYIE. Talk back at issuesetc.org. I keep saying, would the church be doing something out of character? Would it be sending the wrong message for the church to say, we've got to be more careful about this? We have to put some safeguards in place, and we can't simply afford to trust anyone and everyone with the money. Now, the subject continued on CBS this morning. I want you to hear some of that as well, answering the question, is the church too trusting?
Faith and religion contributor Father Edward Beck is with us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
As you were watching this, you said, unbelievable. I have only two questions. Number one, how could she think she could get away with it? And number two, is the church going to be forgiving about this, a forgiving church in the great Christian tradition?
Well, you know what, Charlie? The church is forgiving. It's part of the gospel. But forgiving doesn't mean you excuse this kind of behavior. I mean, this woman stole from the institution, but also its donors. You have to realize that people give money to the church for certain ministries that the church carries out. So they have an obligation to be good stewards of that money. This woman stole from an institution, namely the Education Fund, where Catholic schools in this archdiocese were closing, and she knew that. So you can forgive, but that doesn't mean she doesn't have to do penance. She doesn't have to be prosecuted, and justice has to be wrought.
All right. When we come back, I want your answer to the question. This break is a great time to give us a call. Is the church too trusting with how and who handles the money? 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org is our in-studio email address, or leave your answer to our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Thanks for supporting the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. through the charitable grant program Thrivent Choice. We received more than $15,000 last year through Thrivent Choice. Our goal this year is to raise more than $20,000 through Thrivent Choice. For more information on how you can designate funds to Lutheran Public Radio, look for the Thrivent logo under the donate page at issuesetc.org. Please support Issues Etc. in 2012 with Thrivent Choice.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Theology for Blue Collar, White Collar, and Clerical Collar. You're listening to Issues Etc.
How does Jesus' incarnation provide us with a response to religious relativism? Find out in an article that I've written for the latest Issues Etc. journal. It's titled God in a Box, and we'll send it to you for free. Just send an email to journal@issuesetc.org. You can also read about Pastor Michael Schuerman's journey from moralistic therapeutic deism to the rock-solid theology of the Reformation. The online Issues Etc. journal, journal@issuesetc.org.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
It's a matter of trust.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about a woman who allegedly stole almost $1 million working as a clerk for the New York Archdiocese. It's been discovered, and she was spending the money, putting it in an account. No one even knew it. It took 8 years to pull this off, and when it was discovered, it raises a lot of questions, doesn't it? Because this is very much like many churches, congregations handle their money through a volunteer system or employees without criminal background checks or maybe even being bonded. Is the church being too trusting? Is the church simply being Pollyannish when it comes to who handles the money and how the money gets handled? 1-877-623-6943. Audio open lines. Is the church too trusting? Live this Wednesday afternoon, the 1st of February. 1-877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Or leave your answer to the question, is the church being too trusting? What can we do about something like this? Do we want to put temptation in the way of people who are volunteering to collect and count the church's offerings? Facebook.com/issuesetc. We're listening to some response from CBS this morning. Father Ed Beck, who's the faith and religion contributor to CBS News, his take on what's happened here. How did it happen? And he actually, listen carefully, he's got a story to tell that may sound a lot like something you've experienced as well with regard to how your congregation handles money.
You mentioned the responsibility, too, that the church has with this money, that donors get to it. Is the church too trusting?
Well, sometimes I think the church is too trusting and a little naive. I'll give you an example. I've been giving a retreat in Florida, and I was in the rectory, and this wasn't a parish that I was associated with, and I happened to open a door, and I look in, and there's a woman with a mound of money on a table. And she just looked up, and she was, you know, fine about it. And I closed the door, and I went to the pastor, and I said, you know, what was that? And he said, well, she's counting the collection from Sunday. I said, alone in a room counting all of that money? I mean, any accountant will tell you, two people in a room, don't do that even to the worker. So, I mean, that is very naive. And I think now when something like this happens, the church says, what are our fiscal controls? What do we need to do to get our house in order?
So you're saying that'll change?
It already has changed. There is now background checks that need to be done.
Forward.
And
yeah.
I think as far as the Archdiocese, what we're seeing is, they have those controls now in place. And there will be more controls in place.
That's Father Ed Beck. He's faith and religion contributor for CBS News on CBS This Morning. I want to hear from you on this Wednesday afternoon, the 1st of February. Is the church too trusting? Is the church naive when it comes to how the money's handled and who handles the money? 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE. Leave your answer to that question at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Lou sends his thoughts via the New Issues Etc. Android app. He says, prosecutor stated sophisticated fraud. Was it sophisticated fraud when little children lost their innocence? Were their parents too trusting? How did they think they'd get away with it? Well, those are good questions. Certainly, it's a different subject. But what this woman did do was, and that's the prosecutor speaking, a sophisticated system of fraud. She knew what checks would be flagged for approval by her superiors. She kept her checks, 450 of them that she wrote over 8 years, under the amount that would flag it for approval of a supervisor, and she managed to get them into her son's account and spend a lot of the money, amounting eventually to almost $1 million that she stole. I think they call that grand larceny, because there's so many zeros involved. And now if it can be done there, it could be done anywhere. She was obviously working where a lot of money was handled at the archdiocese level in New York, but maybe it's just your local congregation. It's not $1 million. Maybe it's only $10,000. If something like this were discovered in your congregation, would you say, look, we got to be trusting of these people? Volunteers handle our money. We just got to be able to trust everybody who does that. How would you respond? 1-877-623-6943. Jesse says, churches can prevent a lot of theft by having a good system of internal controls which properly segregates duties. And that's quite true. But think about how it happens in your congregation Sunday to Sunday. Volunteers collect the offering. They physically collect the offering during the service. They gather it together. It goes someplace. In our case, it goes up by the altar. It stays there I'll tell you this, as a pastor, I don't give it a second thought. I walk away. I don't watch that money. I don't know who does. I don't even know who picks it up. Somebody does pick it up. It all gets in the right place. Most of the time, we're talking about very trustworthy people who wouldn't, well, I wouldn't say they wouldn't think of taking money, because there is this situation of putting temptation in someone's way. And without the proper controls, is the church guilty of putting temptation in someone's way? Tribble says the church should go back to, should do background checks for office personnel, especially those who cut checks. There should be internal controls to make this type of theft more difficult. One person cuts the check, a different person signs the check. I think it's okay for volunteers to count the money from the offering plates as long as more than one person is doing it. And I'm glad the lady went to confession for this, but it should not prevent her from being prosecuted to the full extent of the law. Two Kingdoms, says Tribble, quite right there. And I think Father Beck actually agrees there. He says, look, she can come to confession, but she'll probably still do 25 years in prison if found guilty of the charges. Thanks for listening in Austin, Texas. Benjamin says, by her very nature, the church is trustworthy and foolishly so. She cannot help but imitate her bridegroom. Jesus gives himself to sinners completely and abundantly and allows sinners to enter into his kingdom by dying on the cross. How can the church be any different? Granted, this allows difficult situations and difficult decisions to arise, as the story suggests, but the church must let them in. And by then, I mean the poor, the sick, the oppressed, the brokenhearted, and all with whom society deems unworthy. Because sin makes us unworthy, and you only find sinners in church. In a sinful world filled with sinful flesh, the church may take some precautions as she sees fit regarding the safety of the congregation, but it is her Lord's will that the church suffer as he did for the faith, and the work of Christ in his church and forgiveness cannot have we cannot have without the forgiveness of sins. Now, that all that is quite true, but the question I'm asking is, what are those precautions? What are those safeguards? We would do it with our kids. If someone's handling your kids, a school teacher, a Sunday school teacher, we want to make sure that everybody is trustworthy and above board, right? Our money, obviously, much less valuable than our children, but our money is something that we trust to the church, right? So is the church being naive when it comes to handling the money? Aaron Chicago says, in my auditing class, we watched a video telling the story of a woman who was the treasurer of her church and had been for a number of years. The church had given her free rein to write checks, accept payments, and approve requests. Because she was the same person who wrote and cashed the checks as well as the person who recorded them, there was no one to catch her withdrawals in the account. Over the years, she took somewhere in the neighborhood of $600,000 from the church. Point is, I'm not sure how a background check is going to help this. Obviously, background checks will only point out past known past misdeeds. What other than background checks should the church be doing here? Dennis is listening in St. John's, Michigan. Dennis, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Pastor Wilkin. How are you?
Very well.
I just called to offer the suggestion our church uses is that we use two counters who are not related to count the money and then seal it up in the envelope for the bank deposit. And by this way, we remove any possibility of temptation. I just thought other churches might want to consider this as well.
Dennis, thank you very much for listening in Michigan. It's a great idea. There you go. I mean, there's a simple precaution. If you're going to have volunteers, which many churches do, you'll choose two people, and they'll be unrelated. You don't want husband and wife conspiring together, or in this case, just being presented with temptation together. And then make sure that everybody keeps everyone else accountable. It seems like a reasonable precaution to me. Is the church somehow betraying an untrustworthy nature by asking that that be done? 1-877-623-6943. Michael in Indian Head, Maryland. Reading this post, I'm reminded of the 28th chapter of The Life of the Universe and Everything by Douglas Adams, where it says, the major problem, one of the major problems, for there were several, one of the many major problems with governing people is that of whom you get to do it, or rather, of whom manages to get the people to let them do it to them. To summarize, it is well-known fact that those people who most want to rule people are ipso facto those least suited to do it. To summarize the summary, anyone who is capable of getting themselves made president should on no account be allowed to do the job. To summarize the summary of the summary, people are the problem. To summarize the quote, those who want power are those who should not have it, and those who do not want power are those that you want to have it. How do you get around this? I don't know, says Michael. Michael, thanks for listening in Maryland. Tim says, it's not just people like that, and any organization which has access to money like that needs to have proper controls in place to stop things like this from happening. The church needs to understand that it exists in the world in two ways. The church has an outward form, which is an organization. It can manifest itself in different ways. But the church is also an organism, namely the body of Christ. And we can distinguish between the two. We can and necessarily do distinguish between the two. We have accountability not just so that our pastors are held accountable to God's word, so that we hold one another accountable. And while we are at the essence, the very essence of what the church is, that organism, that body of Christ, where forgiveness, trust, even to a fault, reigns. Where the benefit of doubt is always given and the best construction is always put, we are also, in a human sense, an organization where reason and common sense says we trust, but we also verify. When we come back, we'll talk about the Komen Foundation for the Cure withdrawing funding from Planned Parenthood, then the theology of the cross, and tragic events of life. Stay tuned.
Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org.
There's an app for that.
Often imitated, never equaled. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Abortion advocates work overtime to bypass parental safeguards in New Hampshire.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Under a new law, doctors in New Hampshire must provide 48-hour notice to parents for any minor seeking an abortion. But the law allows for exceptions in extraordinary cases where a girl's life might be at stake. Planned Parenthood of New Hampshire has created a legal project designed to connect minor-age girls with attorneys who will walk them through the exceptions clause. Clearly, the abortion business intends to use this bypass as much as possible to negate a law designed to protect New Hampshire's girls.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List, inviting you to join us in our battle for life. For more, go online to sba-list.org.